Hey, Exiles, welcome to a very special episode of the Still Sane Podcast. I have with me here the loot filter legend himself, Neversank, creator of Filterblade, to talk all things Path of Exile 2, The Last of the Druids. We are just about 3 days after the reveal. We've had time to let our reactions simmer, and we're going to break down everything that we think about 0.4 here today. So, Neversank, to get us started, I'm very curious. You're sitting there at home late at night watching Jonathan and Mark unveil 0.4 to everybody. What was your immediate reaction once the presentation ended and we were flowing into the Ziggy D interview?
First of all, hey everyone. Nice to be here. And when I've heard Jonathan speak, first of all, there was some disappointment regarding the endgame thing. I can't deny that. That was definitely when there was like, I was like, and that's it? No endgame? No Atlas changes? No new content there? But, and the second thing was, wow, the tooltips this time are so long. I have to review everything again because these skills have like 5 pages of different special effects. But then there was some short moment of disappointment, but then I started reading the patch notes, and the Ziggy D interview dragged on a little bit too long, in my opinion. But then I read the patch notes, and they were like full of really awesome changes. I haven't even touched on that. There's been like 50 buffed uniques, a ton of really cool improvements to skills, and overall now I'm just very much hyped for the league. Maybe I'll play it for a little bit less than other leagues because no endgame changes, but I will definitely be no-lifing the druid for at least a couple of days or weeks. And yeah, very much excited. What about you?
100%. Yeah, I was extremely excited after that initial reveal there. I knew 100% that the endgame changes were going to be disappointing to a lot of people. Personally, and that's the key word here, it didn't affect me as much because I only play for, I think, max 80-some hours PoE2 during a league. Mm-hmm. But I don't grind the end game a ton. And, I'll love them when they come, and I'll play the end game. I play all the way through to, like, Arbiter. I kill the Arbiter every league. But I don't grind it. And I feel like there's not a lot of depth to the end game still, and that's one of the key facets of PoE. It always has been. It's why it's blown other ARPGs out of the water. And they've known that this is an issue since 0.1. And it's a year now, so I think that's why a lot of people are very disappointed, especially since it was the endgame patch and it got cut. So, yeah, I was like 8 out of 10 right out of the gate, and then I mulled it over a little bit, and then I was like 9 out of 10 for me personally. But I understand, I see a lot of like people, 5 out of 10. Some people are like 3 out of 10 because they don't care about the druid. So I imagine if you're an endgame player and the druid does not look enticing, you're probably not too excited for this patch, so.
Oh yeah, definitely. But there's this thing about GG, and this is somehow what I've already said you this phrase, but this is how I really feel about them. They are not a very reliable company. You can't always rely that the changes you want will be in the next patch notes. But what you can rely on is they're a very consistent company. You can pretty much always tell that the next league is going to be better than the one before. And the next league afterwards is going to be better than the one before. And they will be more or less in the right time spans. And you can rely on the consistency of things getting better, better, and better. So, sure, this patch is going to be a little bit short there. But it is consistent 4 months' time. And 4 months later, I'll be back. And I'm pretty sure the endgame changes will be there. So, a little bit less time here, a little bit more time there. After playing the game for over 10 years, somehow, maybe I became a little bit more abstract from the idea of a single league, and so I'm perfectly okay with that. I'm still very excited for the druid. I've been very hyped for it for since quite a while, and the class does look very good with some little caveats.
100%. We'll dive into all things druid in a little bit. I wanted to ask you a little bit about endgame and the fact that there are, I think, some pretty significant changes that will alter the end game itself, even though there's nothing sweeping, okay? There's no Atlas tree revamp or anything like that. With what's happening, I'm kind of curious, the Arbiter of Ash, it actually has a goal now. You have to kill him to unlock the ability to really juice your maps and upgrade the tablets to rare. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that gate, or actually kind of a goal to killing Arbiter now, because before it was kind of aimless, right?
Mixed feelings. I'm
Okay.
going to be honest. I think the Arbiter is probably the worst boss in PoE2. I feel like design-wise, there's a whole bunch of, in my opinion, cheap shots. Now you can learn them a lot better, but still, I'm not really a huge fan of them. Visually, absolutely stunning, great voice lines, cool attacks, and all of this stuff, but I'm not really feeling that this is a great boss. And then there's all just this fact of inconsistency. What if you won't find all of these things? What if you may mess up one of the three citadels? You're playing Cellfound, you messed up one citadel. Good luck searching for the next 30 hours for the next citadel. And this is just something where I feel like, yeah, all right, it solves the solution, but I feel like everyone already knows this won't stay this way for more than, let's say, 4 or 8 months. So it feels like a temporary solution, maybe something that they wanted to do, or maybe give some players, some sort of additional step to depths in the end game, maybe artificially, but it's not an something I really like to use is the word elegance. I got it from the Rimworld author and his book, and he uses this to describe how well a mechanic is, not just in terms of depths or fun, but also simplicity. And this is not an elegant solution. I feel like in this is a solution that will need rework. We'll see it changed again. And I'm pretty sure everyone who saw that knew kind of in their gut feeling, this won't stay the same.
Right. I
What
think,
about you? Do you feel the same?
my initial reaction was really negative to it. And just locking the ability to upgrade your maps with the tablets, make them rare and everything. After I thought about it, I think the idea is kind of cool because it puts an actual reason behind going after Arbiter, because right now, what is it? It's a few Atlas points, and your boss tree, right? That's it. And they're not that impactful, as we've talked about many times before in the community. However, there's the problem that has existed since launch that many people, including myself, have beat the drum of. Yeah, the entire path to Arbiter is just so inconsistent. It frustrates me to no end. You still have the forums, you still have people in stream chats, you still have me hitting like level 93, going straight out, doing what GGG says to do, looking for citadels and not finding any. I despise that it's RNG. I wish it's the only pinnacle boss. It would be different if there were like five pinnacle bosses and you have the deterministic one, you have the RNG based one. It's the only true pinnacle boss that gates behind now this really cool reward, and it's totally random if you find it or not. And I didn't see any changes to do with citadels in the patch notes, unfortunately. But I just wish that they would have taken that extra step. And I assume they're not doing it because the entire end game will change. But it still feels bad to progress your character so far and still not find this vital part of the end game.
Definitely agree there. I mean, you're definitely right that this adds something like an additional motivation to actually farm Arbiter and get to, well, not farm, but get to him. And additionally, I mean,
What's
the Arbiter boss drops have been improved so much. So that is definitely a big thing. The Moria Invictus armor, the gloves, all of them look a lot better. So at least there's also the incentive in terms of items. But yeah, I feel like the inconsistency, you hit the issue exactly the nail on the spot. That's it needs to fix to get fixed.
Yeah, and it's all seed. I already said it's like RNG based, but then you have like these players who have a better seeded Atlas, and they're like, well, I found like 20 citadels, and this, and it just makes you
Of
feel
course.
oh, so rough. I just wish it was designed a little bit different. I think personally think, if they have these system wins from PoE1, in my opinion, such as your path to the first time you fight the Searing Exarch and the Eater of Worlds. Maybe that should, like, a version of that could be lifted into PoE2. I love that it's very determinist. You know exactly what you need to do. You know how you're going to get that first boss fight, and then you know how you're going to get subsequent boss fights. And
I
I love
find it
that.
very funny that some of the lessons that it feels like a GG kind of should have, could have learned from PoE1 repeat in PoE2. And that doesn't happen all the time. It's kind of more of a rare occurrence, but it's exactly the same thing with the tempo destabilizing, and you have to choose between the Atsiri boss or the temporary setting. It feels like, hey, we kind of had this in Betrayal twice.
Is that how it works? I
I
didn't even realize. So if you kill Queen Atsiri, the temple will
yes
reset.
yes yes
Oh. Uh-oh.
And I mean, I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt there, maybe. And I give Jonathan extra benefit of the doubt. I played Loop Hero 2 weeks ago. I was really amazed by the game, and he mentioned it was his inspiration for the thing. And maybe they'll get some sort of a sweet spot where you kind of choose either that or that at some point. Maybe you say, okay, the tempo is kind of bad now. I want to reset it anyway. But I am worried that this has been a bad decision. Anyway, I'm jumping ahead of there.
Oh, totally fine. And chat is very insistent that they said only two-thirds of the temple will reset. So it's like a partial reset? So maybe part of it explodes? That's
Yes,
it. Oh, that's interesting. Oh.
it feels like every time you complete the temple anyway, only some part of it will reset.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure how it'll work, but if you kill Atsiri, apparently 2/3 of the temple will reset. But the question is, I mean, if you have, let's say, four valuable tiles that you really like, let's say the double corruption tiles or something else you're farming, 2/3 of the temple resetting and will be huge. On top of that, one thing, so when he said Loop Hero, I immediately saw what he was referring to. In Loop Hero, one of the huge mechanics is adjacency bonuses of tiles. So if you place one tile and then place another tile, they kind of get upgraded because they're adjacent to each other. And it feels like this inspiration was very much carried over. So if you reset, you don't just lose 2/3 of the temple, you lose all of these synergy bonuses that you've been really carefully stacking up. So it feels like it's almost probably a full reset. So I won't be surprised that, especially if the uniques will be mediocre, that many players will choose to pretty much never fight a tier in the end.
Interesting. Okay. No, that makes total sense. It because when it resets the temple, it's probably going to be your best rooms. And even if it's not, it might be the room that's empowering those rooms that you want. I see. That makes a lot more sense. Okay. Yeah, that'll be so interesting. I've never played games like that. The closest I've got to building a temple is the Temple of Atzwal, the PoE one, like building your own thing. So I'm very interested to see how this pans out because it's like that on steroids. So.
Yeah, it's very different at the same time. I think it feels like, well, it's inspired by Incursion, but at the same time, the inspiration is mostly in terms of the theme. But the actual gameplay most likely will be very, very different. You are building up the temple, you are partially running. There's this thing with the pastime. It feels like they've injected a lot of different new ideas there. So it's going to be definitely interesting to see. I can actually imagine it will be an absolutely amazing league. And while everyone is currently, not everyone, some people are currently a bit upset about the end game, I won't be surprised if people will be just absolutely enchanted by the temple for the first like week or two.
Right. It seems like it could be a lot deeper system than some people might realize upon that first glance, especially when you're in there placing all the rooms, dealing with the future, the past, all that stuff at once. You have the bosses, you have secret stuff that seemed to be like kind of hinted at. Like there was one, I swear, Neversink, it looked like an updated Metamorph. I saw a boss that was made of other boss pieces. Oh, it looks so cool. I'm like, oh, could this be hinting at something in the future? Like an actually cool metamorph where you fuse together different body parts of bosses throughout the game and they use those abilities. Oh, I'm very excited to explore it all. A qualm I have, let me know if you feel the same way. Sometimes it feels like GGG and some of these breakdowns for PoE1 and PoE2, they've been very. Like they dive pretty deep into a lot of systems, and it leaves less to the imagination than I feel like they did maybe 2 or 3 years ago with reveals. Like they really went into the temple, right? They even showed the Queen Atzeri boss fight. I was shocked. They didn't show all of it. They showed a little bit of it. But I'm curious. Are you a fan of no? This is funny for you because you do a lot of work before the league. Are you a fan of knowing less about the contents of the league and discovering it for yourself when you're playing? Or do you like to be able
Well,
to prepare a lot beforehand?
that's a loaded question because, first of all, in PoE2, I know nothing before the league. In PoE1, I do get to alpha test the league, so I know a little bit of something. But in PoE2, I am exactly as blind and get exactly as much data as everyone else. So it's a bit different there. But
Okay.
regarding the question itself, I feel like it's always great if there's surprises to be found in game. And as much as I appreciate all of the data mined information afterwards, I honestly wish going in blind feels a lot more cool and then discovering all of these cool new things in game. So I can actually imagine there's much more to the league than they've shown. So for instance, one thing that they've shown Atiri, but maybe there's an Uber Atiri. So that is one thing that can definitely exist. I mean, if they're copying PoE1 already or migrating PoE1, on top of that, I would definitely not be surprised if there's another hidden ascendancy class. A couple of theories that could be is maybe if you replace all of your four limbs with grafts and then enter the machine again, maybe you get this sort of option to get some sort of special grafted ascendancy. And I can totally see a blood mage with the whole vow theme having some sort of vow blood mage ascendancy. In general, I feel like they have so much room to hide stuff in this sort of layout. Maybe there's a hidden synergy and the room gets upgraded to something absolutely new. And considering how much stuff they basically have, you know, at this point they can just take a boss, paint him red, add a little bit of fog there, and slap a new unique reward, and everyone will be happy.
Yep. They're the kings of asset research. I noticed that when they were showing off the temple. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, there's a boss in there, oh, the month, and there's slightly rescan. But I honestly do not care when they do that. You know,
definitely.
If the gameplay is good, if the rewards are good, if it feels good, who cares if they're just taking another boss, slamming him in a different arena, maybe giving him one new move? It still feels good to me. So, yeah, I think they did a lot of that.
As long as it's not a pinnacle boss. I feel like for the pinnacles, it's a little bit of a different thing. I did feel that this was a little bit cheap. Kind of on both ends, because both Kulamek and the Despair boss thing, both didn't feel that cool, and at the same time, their visuals were taken, and overall, it felt a little bit underwhelming, but everything else, I just want to tell you, everything else about the Abyss League, except for the Kulamek thing, was absolutely amazing. I absolutely loved Abyss. It was such a cool league.
Yeah. I know we're skipping around the notes, but on that point, obviously, Abyss added to the core game. It has its own tree. We saw a little bit of the tree, dude, and I think it looks like the coolest tree out of all the others. It looked like the nodes that they showed off, at least, were like, oh, wow, that's actually pretty impactful. Okay, this looks more like PoE1 as opposed to the PoE2 trees for the leagues, which honestly are very underwhelming, in my opinion. What did you think about, one, the tree, and then the implementation of Abyss?
So, first of all, I think Abyss itself is the best league we've seen so far. And, I mean, it kind of is understandable. When they designed PoE2, they pretty much said, okay, we need to take as much as possible from PoE1, rework it with as little time as possible so that it's new and flashy and shiny. And now they had time to actually design a league up to the new standards. And so the tree is also designed specifically for the implementation with all of the experience and negative and positive feedback from the past year. So now we can actually see a fully fledged, well-developed league in PoE2 standards. And if you'll see such leagues coming up every couple of months, the game is going to be amazing in, let's say, a couple of years when all of these effects are going to start stack up, emerge, all of the new uniques going to start be improving. So yeah, I think the tree is great. Their nodes are much more interesting. One of the weakest points in PoE2, in my opinion, is the standard Atlas tree. It is such a bore. There are a couple of interesting nodes, but overall, especially comparing to PoE1, it is just it doesn't feel like the same company. It's one of the weakest pieces of PoE2.
Yeah. They talked about swapping with the last 6 months of development effort from 5 years of campaign creation to the end game. And I almost wonder if the Atlas tree was one of those last slap together things, because the main one does feel super underwhelming. And I'm glad. So obviously the end game thing was disappointing. Man, am I so glad that Mark outwardly said, yep, it's disappointing. Here's what kind of what we plan on. Like, it's coming. We know exactly what the problems are. Yep. Atlas tree sucks. Progressions over here. We're going to redo it. All right. And we're going to make it good. We don't want to rush it in. We're going to give it another 4 months to cook. And it should be much better than a half-arsed implementation that we could have got, you know, in 1 week.
That is one of the qualities I appreciate so much about them. Sure, they might mess up. They may make mistakes. They may run out of time. All of these things happen. They're human after all, I think. But they acknowledge the issues they create. They acknowledge if something is missing. There won't be any of this really annoying things going on. Yes, we are aware of the issue and we tried our best. And we are doing all of our efforts to data mine whatever. You know that they tell, well, we messed up. We are working on it. Next league, I'll look into it. And it feels that they are very, very hands-on with this and very honest. And I really appreciate that quality about GEG.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing that, let's switch gears entirely. One thing that I'm very interested to see how GGG tackles in the future relates directly to you. I want to talk about filters for a little bit since we have you on the episode. Okay? So, they intended for Path of Exile 2 to be played without a loot filter. Day 2, I downloaded a loot filter. I said, no, there's no way, GGG. It's not happening. You're not even changing the tags, the color. Oh, we're doing a filter, right? With that being said, and they always said, oh, because we don't need a loot filter, we're not going to put it in game. Right up front, do you think that eventually they will make a homegrown filter in PUE2, kind of like Last Epoch? And if they do, what are the challenges behind that for them?
Once again, well, it's a loaded question. I don't know. I honestly think yes.
Okay.
So the moment where I started thinking that the answer to that is yes, is the moment they implemented async trade. Because to make a good filter, you don't just need... I mean, the filter logic itself is really not that hard. It is a rule set of if that, then show this. If not, then show that. And there's like a couple of hundreds of rules stacked up one after each other. There's order to them. There's a lot of details. There's a lot of fine details. But, you know, a developer and a data expert with some time and an expert on the game, given 1 month, can bring together something very, very solid. And with player feedback, you can polish it up to a quite good thing. The issue with a filter is the community. And I mean it in the best way possible. PoE is an insane game. Things change constantly. There's new builds, there's new metas, there's new discoveries, there's a lot of special niche cases. The fact that something is not on the filter that is used by most players will definitely be abused by some people. And there's the decisions you put into the filter manipulates the economy and what the players feel and how much access they have to the items. So the issue they have is they need to actually, if you want to make a good filter, what I want to say is you need to be really good at working with data. And with them working towards being able to price an item, that is actually the first prerequisite they need to properly create a loot filter. So with that being available, maybe at some point we'll see some sort of a semi-simplified script or semi-simplified UI where you can tell, well, if that's unique and it's worth at least 10 chaos, or the cheapest version of it is worth at least 10 chaos, and then show it. If it's a jewelry, or no, if it's some sort of currency, always show it. If it fits to my build, always hide it. Maybe they choose to go for some simplified version. There's a lot of challenges there, and some of them include, well, how do you migrate it from one league to another? They rename like all items every league, and there's like a lot of small and large things. But, you know, with the game growing, with the game becoming more and more pretty much the front line of the ARPG world, I can definitely see that it's going to be there is a future where there will be a full-fledged in-game filter editor. I'm not sure if this will be something that all of the end-game players will be using in the end anyway, because I feel like with modern filters being like 5,000-6,000 lines long, editing it in-game might be a bit too hard.
Right. Now, your filter, it's a Herculean task, what you do, in my opinion. I've watched some of your streams. Man, I have a computer science degree. I haven't used it in like 6 years. Just watching you go through even some of the more simple stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Now, are there any other features that you guys are implementing for this particular league, or any recent ones that people might not be aware of? Because I know you got the filter, right? Which is honestly what I use most of the time. I just get your base filter. I have the regular, strict, very strict, uber strict, all that for PUE1, PUE2. Mm-hmm. But then you have all these other tools on top. Do you guys have any new features coming? And are there any like underutilized features that you think people would really love to use if they actually knew they existed. Because some people might just be like me, where they get the default filter and that's what they use.
Well, yes to both. So okay. From the features, I am okay with spoiling that they're coming. There's some even larger features coming in 0.5, but I don't want to talk about that
right
now.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, Neversync. I see you're pulling a GGG here. You're delaying to 0.5. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But there are cool features for 0.4. So 0.3, we implemented this auto-adjust feature on Filter Blade. And the idea there is you go to Filter Blade, you click this auto-adjust button, and then you get this nice little UI, because Filter Blade is a cool site. There's a lot of power. You can do a lot of different things. You can customize your filter to some insane degree. I've seen people doing like 7,000-8,000 changes to the filter, and at some point, even I lose track what they're up to. So, but this is a lot of complexity, and sometimes right. All you want to do is you want to play Druid, you want to have an optimal Druid filter. So what we've built in 0.4 is we've built this auto-adjust button. You click it, it's right on the front end of the filter blade, on the front page of filter blade. You click it, you select Druid, it gives you the pre-selection of armor, weapon types, and then you click apply, and then you get a pre-customized filter. It's working perfectly fine. And now we are bringing the same thing for the end game. So there's a similar feature where you can select what are you playing in the end game, what do you want to sell, what do you want to salvage, and then it automatically configures all of the tiered items, all of the crafting bases, all of the potentially interesting pick upable things. So this is what we are bringing for 0.4, this auto adjust feature for the end game. I think it's going to help a lot of players get a filter with just, well, basically a couple of clicks. You go to the site, select your class, adjust a couple of buttons, no huge complexity there. And if you want, you can then go to customize and still fine tune everything afterwards.
Excellent.
Yeah. And on top of that, there's a lot of work involving getting the tiering to be better. I mean, if you've played Keepers, right?
I did 36 challenges, baby. Yep.
Woo. Awesome. I selected the challenge this time. I leveled to level 97, and I still am at 16 challenges.
They were so easy.
Either way,
they were so easy.
I know. I just didn't feel like it. I farmed the Mage Blood, and I was like, okay, I'm done with the league. I'm gonna go do some development. PoE2 is in like 3 weeks. Yeah. I need to do some filter stuff there. I don't wanna do any more farming. We had a lot of troubles with divination cards in Keepers of the Flame. And that's because with the introduction of the async trade and then the introduction of the marketplace, there's a lot of special issues there. So I've done a ton of reworks regarding how we treat tiering divination cards. I found a whole bunch of new ways to isolate market manipulation possible that are done by the players.
Oh.
So I'm bringing in all of these things into the filter generation. So the filters update every couple of hours. I'm bringing all of these things in for PoE2 now, and I hope the tiering in PoE2 will be even more accurate. So if you find a currency, if you find a unique, you can pretty much know that it's definitely in the price range the filter displays. And that is always kind of a bit of this extra challenge that for a while, there was a card that was worth one Chaos Orb, and it was displayed like it was worth multiple Divines, because I didn't catch this one special case of stashes and the marketplace being manipulated at the same time. But now I have this covered. So that is also something I'm very excited about. Just, it's nothing fancy, but it's there's a lot of work to create just super accurate tiering.
Well, we appreciate you. You and Sir Gog are trying to fight against the market manipulators in PoE1 and PoE2. Now, I'm interested to hear, do people ever accuse you of manipulating the market when you're making filter changes? I know you don't do it. I'm not throwing any accusations, but do people ever come at you? If they are, what are their names? We'll go. We'll get them. Okay.
Perfectly honestly, I mean, I am manipulating the market, not intentionally, and not with evil intent. So I'm not doing it for any personal gain. But the fact that, since so many people are using the filter, if something is omitted or something is not highlighted correctly, I am definitely manipulating the market. It's not done with any intent of doing any benefit there. But for instance, one of my banes of existence were definitely the over-quality items in PoE1. The items are kind of like exceptional, that drop with quality more than 20%. So I had some, I think it was the Warlock Gloves. I had them highlighted if they were at 27, 28, 29, and 30%. But at 25% quality, they were worth, I think, like a couple of chaos. But at 26%, people were still selling them for like multiple divines, and I was not highlighting them. That was already a market manipulation. So there's a lot of these super niche scenarios where between level A and B and this sort of quality and this type of double corruption and this type of niche case. So yeah, there's definitely unintentional market manipulation. But honestly, at this point, after 10 years of playing PoE and playing a self-founded calf of the leagues, I don't have any personal reason to manipulate any markets. And in addition to that, I do value my reputation and standing with the community quite a bit. So it's just not something that is at any point reasonable by any stretch of imagination.
Which league, if you remember, was the most difficult in PoE1 or PoE2 history to update the filter? Is there any that sticks out to you? I don't think I asked you this when we chatted last year.
There's a bunch of really harsh leaks. So there was this very, very old leak. I'm not sure which one it was, that added minimap icons, sounds, and beams at the same time. And it was, I think it was Incursion or something, and that was just a huge overhaul in the filter. Then 0.2, the Huntress update, they've renamed, I think, 300 bases.
Yes.
And there's no way to alpha test that for me, and there was like just 3 days to get all of that done. So that has been a huge MS. And the way I remember Settlers of Kalgoor, that has also been hugely complicated. There were the overquality bases, there were the new endgame bases. Heist was also tricky. But yeah, I was very happy that Settlers was very chill. Settlers was very easy to update. But this leak, I am imagining it is going to be really, really hard to do. So 0.4 will be like a 7 to 8 out of 10 in terms of difficulty. There's the whole new talisman things. They renamed a huge amount of bases. There were already talismans in the game, so they will rename all talismans to something else, and this needs to be migrated on Filterblade. This needs to... And if any, one single item has one wrong letter in this 500 kilobyte document or something, the filter will not compile, and I can't test it. So it's going to be fun.
Wow. Okay. I do not envy you. I appreciate you coming and taking the time to do this. I know the work is about to begin. When does it usually begin? Is it a few days before when they provide a certain file?
So we have this. It's 3 weeks before the leak start. So I've been working. So we start working on new features 3 to 4 weeks before the leak start. We're pretty much. So I've been working on this new update for since a couple of weeks already. But it's not been, you know, it's not full time. It's a couple of hours every day, maybe it's every couple of days. But then usually. Now I'm actively working on the endgame adjustments now that I know the patch notes. So I'm re-tiering all of the uniques. I'm doing a lot of the tiering adjustments. So it's not just putting an item to a different tier. It's right. Basically teaching an algorithm to treat a new item in a different way. But then once the filter file is there, that's, of course, super concentrated as much time as possible, sleep minimization mode. But yeah, a couple of weeks before the leak start is usually when they start working on new features.
Okay, one more filter question. And this, I don't know the answer. I truly am curious about this. So with this patch, we're kind of getting Thalborn uniques in the temple with Val uniques, where there's this crafting thing where you can remove a mod and add a mod from a unique item. And the way I heard it was kind of random. So you can remove any of the mods. You can remove the downside from the unique and add a nice modifier. Can it read mods on unique items? Like, say it it can't. Okay, because I was going to be like, okay, what if the example I saw, Hateforge, removes the thing at max rage, if that's removed, would the unique, like, have light up the entire temple when it drops or something?
I am both upset and a bit fortunate that it did not do that. Right. That means I am perfectly okay if I can just highlight the fact that this unique is somehow modified and leave it up to the player to figure out what this was.
Okay, awesome. I just needed to know. I was really curious because I thought about that with the Foulborns and everything when I was getting them. I was wondering, okay, is it going to tell me like, all right, this one's giga valuable versus it? But yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, end of loot filter stuff. Let's go to, okay. We'll end with the druid, okay? Let's end with the druid and let's go over to balance, okay? Because there were a lot of balance shift this patch, and one of them is an addition as well as a shift. And I know you want to talk about it. It's a little spicy. A lot of people are a little upset. Totems, okay? Obviously, in this change, in this patch, we have the spell totems, and now ancestor totems have been changed to require 3 endurance charges to use. There's been a lot of debate online. I'm going to be asking Jonathan about it tomorrow, too, to get their intent. I think you're on the money with their intent, so I think it's going to be a little bit of a repeat answer. But I'm curious, what do you think about this whole fiasco with totems?
So, I'm going to tell something heretical, and I think a lot of PoE1 players are going to hate me for that. I feel like totems in PoE1 are not that awesome. Yes, you can just place them down. Then you place your 5-6 special smaller sticks, and each of them deals a little bit of damage. And you pretty much always play Hierophant, and then you run around in circles because your character doesn't deal any damage yourself. That's basically the totem playstyle in PoE1. You maybe drop a Brand or a support spell. I'm not saying it's bad. We've been playing that for ages. Never play a totem boot occasionally myself. But honestly, I feel like it's not exactly that great either. While PoE1 had some rough spots here and there, PoE2 had some rough spots here and there, PoE2 have actually shown some amazing quality of improved combat style. We have these cool boss fights. We have characters like the Monk performing interesting combos. We have the fluid combat and things. And I really don't want the PoE2 playstyle turn into this: you place a couple of sticks, then just run around in the circle. Now, the issue with that, of course, you can of course say, "Well, what's the issue? If you don't like it, someone else will play that." Well, the issue is if there is a very efficient way to play. We saw it with lightning speed. Everyone will play it because you feel stupid in an ARPG if you don't do that. So I feel like with PoE2 being you will still be able to run totems only or primary totems, but I think this will require some high tier gear. So I actually like the approach with totems. I like that totems are this sort of super ability. You need to get some charges, and there are some ways to generate charges, but I'm going to be honest, I feel like GEG needs to add more ways of adding charges. Don't necessarily need to be easy, but there needs to be just more ways. Because right now you can use Vow's Devotion, you can use some profane rituals, you can use some very slow things. Like, no one in the end game is going to eat corpses. Slow down, start eating corpses with the Wyvern, keep moving. That is not how you play in the end game. It is just way too slow. The bear, maybe. If the bear passively generates enough endurance charges, cool. I can see that. That is a working method. But overall, I feel like we just need better tools. And the charges mechanic, I'm going to be also. I feel like I can't exactly put it right towards. I feel like it's not the most elegant thing I've seen. So it is working. It is a working example of a generator spender, but I feel like there's just something to it. It could be somehow better. I'm not sure how yet, but I feel like it's not the most elegant way they could have implemented that.
It's still clunky because there's just a few, like you said, you just listed off 3 things right there for power charges. There's just a few very specific actions that you need to take or things that you need to do, whether you're like going to somewhere on the tree or something that you need to do. There's very few options available, but they're locking certain play styles behind those options. I think you're bang on with the elegance. I'm going to add this elegance thing to my dictionary now. I like this word elegant constantly. That's good. That's really good. So I think you're bang on there, and I think it ties into another balance change that doesn't affect just one playstyle, it affects us all, that I've also seen probably the most debate about. And it's the 40% reduction to density of monsters once you hit T15 maps. Mm-hmm. So it's basically campaign size packs throughout. What is your take on what Grindgear Games has attempted to accomplish here? Because honestly... Sorry, just one more thing. Jonathan said
I actually want to ask you, what is your take there?
Oh, okay. Here. Jonathan said it was because people were getting swarmed. I'm going to ask him tomorrow, but I don't know if that's like an accurate representation. I don't think that's what people were feeling. I think the big thing was what they're trying to accomplish is, okay, people are getting swarmed. What does that mean? It means that they can't see their character. It means that a lot's happening on screen. There's a lot of monsters going on. You are forced to use abilities that will destroy the entire pack very quickly, if not instantly. And that's not like the attrition-based gameplay that you see for, I think, a good chunk of the campaign, at least. I've often said my favorite zone throughout PoE 2 is the manor. Because it feels like a war of attrition. If you are if you're not underleveled, you're like right on point, and you're moving from the top of the manor to Count Geonor, that is peak PoE 2 gameplay. I love it. I would love to see that rolled out to endgame as well. I know that's very difficult due to it being an ARPG. But I feel like with this change, they're working toward that. You know, better visual clarity, it makes more skills viable. It should make more like defenses viable now, because now you're not getting peppered by a bunch of extra monsters too. So it's kind of an indirect buff to defense. And I bet it improves performance as well. But I think there's a lot of pros here. It goes back to their original vision of the game, because last league, I'll stop my yapping after this, I thought it was over.
Okay.
I thought it was totally over. I played Abyss. I did so many Abyss maps. I did lots of endgame juicing, not with three towers, but okay, max tablets and everything, right? Six mods, corrupted eight, whatever. And I could not see my character. I was playing Ice Strike Monk Hollow Palm Technique. I would just shattering a palm in and then just start auto attacking and everything would blow up. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is fun and everything, but it's nothing like what I expected PoE 2 would be.
Yeah.
Feels a lot like PoE 1. Okay. That's what I think. Never say, what do you think?
I think we agree on most points here. So they announced PoE 2, they said it's not going to be exactly the same as PoE 1, and it's supposed to be a different game with some more refined combat, with some difference and so forth. And I actually like this idea. I feel like PoE 2 can and should try to have a better identity. If it fails, they can still roll back and do everything PoE 1 style. But honestly, the way I've been playing last leagues, it's kind of the same thing. I've been just moving through the map, sparking all over, the huge amounts of explosions from Carrot of Ice and Carrot of Sun, they're everywhere, monsters dying everywhere. And if you see like any lightning arrow gameplay, it's not like they're aiming. It's just Nova projectiles in all directions. Everyone fires in all directions. Everything chains in everywhere, explosions everywhere. And yeah, I suppose it's nice. On top of the delirium fog, and you've talked about that enough yourself, but this is, sure, it's just basically a loot pinata walking simulator at this point. And I honestly think, I feel like the game deserves better. I feel like with all of the mechanics they've put in, with all of the combat options they've put in, with all of the interesting monster and boss types they've put in, I like the idea of combat being a bit nuanced. Now, I still think players can and will break the game completely. Let's be honest, monsters having 40% more HP, That's stopping no one. That's stopping not. I'm not talking like super crazy build makers. That's stopping really no one. It's like one upgrade away for every player to just reach the same level of power. I don't know if the swarming exactly was the problem itself. The problem, in my opinion, was that there were pretty much all monsters felt swarmy except for the rares. So I feel like there needs to be challenging fights in the maps. And then you can have some swarmers and you need to take them out quickly. And you should have to take them out quickly. But there should be... the combat shouldn't be so streamlined. Just, you know, you can just use the same ability to go from A to Z in the map. You don't need to navigate. You don't need to evade. You don't need to do anything. So I feel like this kind of demanding that the player does a little bit of minimal effort. And I'm not saying they need to combo everywhere. But, you know, just a little bit of effort is probably not the worst thing.
Yeah, and something there sticks out to me. So in D&D 4th edition... RIP, worst edition. I'm going to stand by that. They had different monster types. They had like bruisers and snipers and healers, right? You just said there needs to be swarmers. Totally agree. I feel like once you hit endgame a lot of the time, monsters also lose their identity. And that's why I will hark on this. I'm not saying we need Dark Souls where each boss has its own idea and each monster needs to be like, no, I'm just saying you should know, oh shoot, there's the goblins and the goblins, they're going to swarm me. They're going to get right up on top of me. oh, here are the giant vulture demons. Well, we got to watch it. They're going to do big leap and they're going to slam down. You got to be a little careful. They're going to be a little tankier. You might need to do a little kiting, right? Just a little kiting. I'm not saying you need to kite through the entire map,
yes,
you guys.
Yes.
But
yes,
like
absolutely.
The different mods, they should give different feels. That's what I always imagined with PoE 2. When I chatted with like Jonathan a long time ago, he said, oh yeah, rare monster versions of regular mobs will have an extra attack, like a special attack,
yep,
to them. You know? They ditched that, obviously very sad about it, in,
yep,
favor,
yep,
of just the rare mods. But that excited me so much because I thought, oh wow, the monster design is great. But it dies. The moment you hit endgame, it all becomes swarmy. You just blow up everything up. And like you said, you kind of walk throughout the map just killing everything. In the campaign, I do feel like I am engaging with the monsters a lot more. Or I did with the builds that I made. And I thought that was really fun. And different from,
yep,
PoE 1, different from Last Epoch, different from D4. It was unique. I really enjoyed it. So
one more note on that.
Yeah.
I feel like you are exactly correct about the fact that the monsters themselves need to feel differently. It's not just the rare mods. I feel like the rare mods have been, on one end, they feel like a step forward, but I think they're also a step backward in a sense. I feel like we've been getting to the point where the rare mods on the monsters have been replacing the monster identity.
Yeah.
This has been, I think in D3 it's been the worst, where we basically, you fight a monster, it's not been a monster that is, you know, some sort of special demon. No, it's arcane enchanted, lightning enchanted, bigger, I don't know, Wacom or something. And PoE is kind of getting in the same issue where you have this monster. Well, you can't damage him if you're not close enough. And this one got a bubble. And this one has some sort of volatile when he dies. But the actual attacks on identity, unless they one-shot you, basically doesn't matter. And I would really like to see PoE 2 personally. That's my take. Maybe a lot of people disagree. I would personally really would like to see a take where rare monsters are kind of like these larger champions with interesting abilities by themselves. And you kind of need to learn their, or not exactly learn, but at least to consider their abilities and their attacks. And sure, they may have some one or two rare special mods, but this is more on top of everything else and more supplementary to their own powers.
Yes. I hope that they do take this direction going forward, because you're totally right. It just becomes the monster modifier, and I feel, or the rare monster modifier. I feel this happened so hard with Abyss, the Abyss rares. Each of the Abyss rares were unique. They were unique Abyss monsters. They had cool, mm-hmm, attacks, mm-hmm, and everything. But honestly, after the campaign, I only cared about the modifiers. I was just caring, like,
yep,
okay, is it, does he have Shroud Walker? Does he have the degen,
yeah,
around him?
Yeah, the circle.
Oh,
yep, yeah, yeah,
my,
yep,
God. And then in 031, they added like a ground degen that the rares could drop too. And I'm like, why did you add this extra rare? Oh my. But it didn't become about the monster. It was just the rare monster modifiers that I cared about. And they, as opposed to fighting a specific monster who has certain attacks and certain things you need to watch out for, watching out for the rare mods and like reading them on screen and then seeing, like, and most of them are like annoying too. Like, they're annoyances. You can't regenerate.
Yep.
You can't stand in this little green puddle. You are slowed by 30% or whatever. You're mad. Right.
Yep.
So those are annoying. It's like it's a cop out. I feel like it's a cop out. And I hope that they take that back and they do exactly what you said. Make rare monsters have special abilities like they said they were going to, and maybe make them have 1 to 2 mods, essentially. Without reducing the loot that they drop, because that would be disastrous, right, guys?
they can even increase the loot that they drop. I would take 2 less monsters rare. If they want to have like just stronger rare monsters that are slightly stronger, we have a thing for that. It's called champions. These sort of blue monsters. I think they're perfectly fine if they're just a little bit stronger than the normal versions. But I would rather have these sort of lieutenant elites in the map. They drop a lot more loot, but they feel like a tiny boss fight. It just lasts 1, 2, 3 seconds, maybe 5, maybe just 1, maybe half a second. But, you know, they exist. In PoE 1, most monsters are defined by their own death effects. And
No, you're totally right. If I laughed over Neversink, he said in PoE 1, most of the on-death effects or the monsters are defined by their on-death effects. So true.
The authors of Diablo 3, I think, said that they've put the most effort into the death effects of the monsters because this is what matters most. And I feel like, well, then you're making a bad name. Then the problem is how you're building the game.
Right, right.
Not the...
Bang on. I agree with you so much right now. I think you're touching on I think this probably is the most divisive point for PoE 2 players right now, because a lot of people will be like, well, I just want to pop into maps, turn my mind off completely, complete a map in a minute. You know, I want to make sure I'm getting div from the map. I want to get like the loot explosion. I want that too, but I also want that extra element of gameplay. You know, and I feel like it's, I don't know why it's contentious, but it feels like it is. You know, I just played 40 hours of PoE 1, only took 40 hours. Never said, you still have time to get your challenges. I got all 36 in 40 hours as a noob. Okay. I played 40 hours of that and it was great and all. It was fun. I had a good time, but I think, like you said, PoE 2 deserves better. I think it doesn't need to just fall into that game. We have that game. We have it. It's PoE 1. I think D4 and The Last Epoch have also emulated PoE 1 in a lot of ways. I think they're also kind of chasing that, because D4 isn't emulating Diablo 2, right? And PoE 1 at this point isn't emulating Diablo 2 either. It's its own thing. And that is what a lot of ARPGs are like chasing after, it seems like. Now, Torchlight Infinite, right? Same sort of thing. So.
And to be honest, there is something to D2 more than the historical value. I think the two things that they got really right is the sort of big item hunt in D2 and the feeling of combat. And despite D2 having such a simple combat system, in the end, you usually like just bash until rare, and PvP between players is usually who dies first, both left click, and they see who hits each other and whose defense rating fails. But there is something, some sort of a depth where combat takes place. You know, there is this meaningful moment of contact that most of the time monsters exist. They have some time to damage you, and you need to actually consider this time. And I feel like, just to maybe to the people listening and preparing their pitchforks, I'm not saying you shouldn't be able to reach the point where you can't bypass all of that and just explode everything. But you know, there is this saying, a power fantasy earned is better than power fantasy given. I think just the moment until you reach this point, it should be a little bit taking a little bit more effort. Last league, I felt like campaign was torturous. I played sorceress and I decided I'm going to only play with elemental spells. It's been a terrible decision. Sorceress in 0.3 has been really, really weak in campaign. Then you enter endgame, I get my spark setup run up, and I'm basically 10 times more strong, and suddenly everything explodes. I've been 10, even maybe 100 times strong in the campaign, and it feels like I'm playing a completely different game, and everything, all of the combos, all of the infusions, everything is just right out of the window, and it's somewhat better, but it also feels like it feels cheap. It felt cheapened.
Yeah.
And I think it needs to be streamlined. Maybe some classes like the Sorcerer, and they've done a lot of work. Sorcerer is a lot better now, at least according to the patch notes. But then the end game shouldn't feel like you're suddenly just turning on the loot pinata extreme mode and all of the combat is gone.
Good point there too. You said it feels better there at the end game, right? When you suffer, that it was torturous, right? And it feels better. I think that's okay, right? And I think that's something that's important to realize, that right now, suffering through the campaign on like a not fleshed out archetype, poorly balanced archetype, whatever, and then getting the end game and it feeling better is fine. That doesn't mean that grinding your games just needs to make the game all like the end game, right? It means there's a problem there. And it's a problem. They don't need to abandon it for PoE 1. I see a lot of people say, I'm sorry, I'll say Zoom. I see a lot of people saying, oh, well, they already solved this in PoE. It feels good. Zoom feels good. Go back to Zoom. I am so glad that they're not just abandoning the gameplay that they were trying to push for originally, the original pitch. Because I wasn't dooming, because I'm like, whatever. I'll just play the game regardless. I thought it was over. When I was doing those Abyss Overrun maps, dude, I thought it was done. I was like, all right, it's PoE 1 time and PoE 2. But it really seems like it's going in a different direction. So I'm excited. Such great takes, man. Really enjoyed hearing about that. Okay. A few more things that I want to tickle your brain on. Okay. Rarity. All right. Spicy topic. Apparently there's changes coming in the future. It's being removed from gear. Maybe? It wasn't clear to me, so I'm going to follow up and be like, is it being removed from gear? But apparently the mods this patch have been made lower on gear, okay? Which, okay, monkey brain, doesn't that just mean that's going to be like, you need more rarity on your gear to get to where it was before? I don't know. What are your thoughts on what is going on with rarity affecting currency, uniques, and tiered items, all that? What's going on? What's happening? What's the conundrum with GGG?
So I feel like Rarity is complicated. They were very convinced that removing Rarity is the right spot. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not a fan of Rarity. I feel like it's not a great stat. It comes with some issues, but I'm going to be honest there also. I feel like it's not a bad stat. It's something that people can choose to run and they can choose to play and it can be fun. The issue comes with the question is how easy is it to run Rarity? How efficient is it? And what kind of content is there that, well, kind of doesn't benefit from Rarity? In PoE1, we have a lot of content types where you can run them and Rarity doesn't help you a tiny bit. In PoE2, Rarity is just way better than in PoE1. You have all of the currency scaling. Yes, it's complicated. There's probably some weird recursions there that makes it work. But still, I feel like they... So first of all, I got a little bit off stray there. Anyway.
Fine.
First of all, I feel like they move, they pulled this leak. It's not good. They didn't reduce the effectiveness of Rarity. They only made it harder to access. So yes, sure, that means that for a top level player, maybe stacking Rarity is not quite as effective because you don't get quite as much from the best possible item. But at the same time, you're totally right. It means that you still want Rarity and you want probably more of it on different items because it's just very efficient. So I'm not a big fan of their choice. At the same time, so what I would like to see is just Rarity not quite being as effective, especially for currency, and having more content. Like the Vow Temple probably is not affected by Rarity. The rewards there. So if you run them and you find these sort of highs, curious, or rewards, they're not Rarity affected. I think PoE2 just needs more good boss fights, more rewards like that, and maybe the rarity shouldn't affect currency. I think it will be good. I'm not sure we need to necessarily remove it, because there's a lot of players who just enjoy this. They enjoy having big loot explosions, and it's cool. I think it's a viable playstyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think our takes are very similar. As someone, I don't even engage with it. You know, and I know that puts me at a major disadvantage in the economy, but I looked at the end of my character's progression last league when I was like signing off. I took a look because I didn't go toward it. I was running 0% rarity. I was fine. I'm still getting a div here and there. I got a Rakiata's flow. Let's go. Easy 28 divine orbs. Oh, I was so hyped when that dropped. Yeah, that was great. So, but there, like you said, there are a lot of people who enjoy engaging with it. So I think there's a nice middle ground there. And they are taking their time with it. I am shocked with their approach with this particular league, knowing that since 0-1, people have been banging like, oh, rarity's a problem. What's that? Well, we're just going to lower the amounts on gear. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they move forward with it. And it will also be interesting to see what percentage of PoE Ninja players will be Druid starting, let's say, maybe a week into the league. Okay, because Druid obviously is out. Okay, we've got two ascendancies with it. We have three shape-shifting forms. Talismans is a weapon. I want to tackle a few of these things here with you. Let's start with something that maybe is a little contentious from me. The ascendancies never sing. What do you think about the shaman and the oracle ascendancies on the druid? Open-ended question.
Well, I'm going to ask your opinion first. What do you think about
it? All right. I'll give you time to think. I am whelmed. All right, guys. I was whelmed when I immediately saw them. I saw the shaman. I was like, all right, so more of a spellcaster thing. We got some rage nodes in here. All right. Okay, so it works with a lot of the shape-shifting abilities, but I think it's a two-pointer. So it's like one, two, the rage. Mm-hmm. And the rest seem very spellcasting focused. All right, kind of shape-shifting fantasy. Not a lot, though. And then we go to the Oracle, and I'm just like, whoa, this is interesting. But I don't know if I want a whole bunch. I'm not going to touch it. Okay, so we've got 150 nodes, and we have the dual monsters, and you can damage both of them. And then you have the Simon Says thing, where you can use an ability after a copy of you uses it and tells you to. I'm like, what? I almost feel like they, like, overthought. So I don't know. Where is my Unga Bunga? I want to turn into animals and get power from it. That's what I was looking for.
Yep. I definitely agree there. That was also my feeling. And so, first of all, I feel like there may be some reworks, or maybe they will simplify some things, and they said it's not final, and we don't know all nodes.
Right.
But I definitely do agree. I've been looking for something like a wildcard druid that if you are in an animal form, you are moving 10% faster, and you attack so much faster. If it's a bear form, it also gets this and this. And I feel like, especially for people starting to play that, and there's also this thing, druid is probably right now the most complicated of all classes by far, because it basically, especially if you want to engage with this power fantasy of using spells and transformations, you will pretty much want to have two trees at the same time. You will pretty much want to have staff and talisman, because there is this thing, I'm not very happy with that. Talismans basically provide zero bonuses for your spells. So you need to kind of go for this double switch. And it's also kind of problematic, because that means you can't go with, you know, talisman and spear and still use spells and whatever. But anyway, that's a different topic. Yeah. And then on top of that, with all of these things, you kind of have these PhD level ascendancies where, sure, you can spend 4 ascendancy points to unlock 175 unknown passive 2 points, and one of them is 7% chance not to die. But you know what? I'm not going to do that. That is not a level of build planning I'm willing to do with all of the unknowns at the start of the league. Now, I'm going to be honest, the Shaman looks a lot more accessible. I feel like the node that gives the runes a second effect, that one feels insane to me. You know, like I'm going to take a Moria Invictus, 5 sockets, have extra sockets everywhere. It's going to be so good. But, and then you have the Rage nodes, but everything else also feels so... Yeah, this Apocalypse node, I've been burned out by Stormweaver and Invoker, and both of them had like terrible triggered spells on their trees. I'm not going to take Apocalypse. And then you have like weird things there, and the second Rage node is kind of weird. So I agree. I wish there would be a simpler ascendancy that is just you transform into a bear and your bear is bigger. Wow, I'm taking that.
Yes, let's go. Because I'm feeling... I won't do it. I will start Druid, but I'm feeling a Smith of Catawba or a Titan Bear might be better. Just looking at it, yep. But I gotta.
I might just go for a Titan Bear or for a Catawba Bear.
Yeah.
But realistically, it feels like it's kind of the same with last league with Sorcerers. I felt like I'm not gonna take Eldritch Drain. I want to experience the full glory of Sorcerers, Elemental Sorcerers. Then I had like 100 deaths when it was in maps. So,
oh my god, dude.
I hope it won't be this way. But it might. And the classes are somewhat gimmicky, but you know, maybe they will change that.
Okay. So it sounds like you and I are in agreement. Bear. Mm. Bear start.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Bear start.
Okay. And I think that given my track record of loving the monk, I might slip into wolf, because it just looks like a monk in wolf's clothing. Serious. That's literally. I was like, whoa, that looks like a cooler ice strike. Okay, let's do it, man. Okay. With some howling, and you get to have a wolf pack. Looks kind of sick. So what do you think about the unique talismans and the potential there? Obviously, we saw one that actually changes your shape-shifting bear form into... It's an interlude boss, an interlude too, I believe, like the fire demon guy. What do you think about the potential? Do you think they can do some funky stuff with that in the future?
Yeah, I think that is at least the one we saw, it looked absolutely amazing. The fire talisman, the demon form. You know, the demon form, I saw the last line, it was like, okay, I want this thing. The last line was, it generates glory every second. And there was some absolute trivial condition. And that was like, okay, I'm going to make a permanent apocalypse bear. And if I want to, I'm going to take a spear and the offslaught and take the newly buffed spear of Solaris and throw spears of hammers onto bosses as well. So you have like so much power potential with this talisman, but there's definitely a lot of potential. I think there's a lot of cool talismans they can create. I'm a little bit conflicted with the talismans, so, because one thing that I just want to touch on, it's a little bit similar topic. One thing that I'm a bit conflicted about with the whole druid thing is that you have, let's say, 6 abilities for the wolf, 6 abilities for the bear, I think it's less, 6 abilities for the wyvern. And then you have, I don't know, 6 to, I suppose, 8 caster abilities. Mm-hmm. And it feels like overall it's just not quite as many abilities, because, you know, as a monk, you get to choose between like 20 abilities.
Right.
And out of them, let's say 15 are combo able, and now you're stuck with a talisman with like six different abilities. So I hope that unique talismans and maybe even the base talismans add some interesting properties there. Maybe the talismans have some interesting implicits there. They've been doing that a lot with different bases. So I can imagine that the talisman we find maybe gives something. If you turn into a wolf, you get this extra ability, or you get the double the wolf pack size with this talisman, or you get, I don't know, some extra slam as a bear. So that would be interesting.
I'm wondering if they're putting in any talismans that encourage form hopping too. I know this is something in other games. Like, I've seen a lot of people in streams say, oh, you know, in World of Warcraft, form hopping is a huge thing with druids or shamans, whatever they're called, and WoW. I'm wondering if that'll be like an implicit or a unique specific to do with, all right, you get this bonus if you've been a wolf in the last 10 seconds, this bonus if you've been a bear. I think that'd be an interesting talisman idea to pop into the game at some point.
I can definitely see that, especially since it's already kind of there by the base forms. The Wyvern form, this dragon flight breath ability, seems to be especially great if you were in a bear or a wolf form before, because you want rage with that and you want power charges. So if you were in a different form before and you kind of go in a bear form, you have your slam setup, your meteors dropping around that, you build up a lot of rage, and then you face a boss and you turn into a wyvern and to go instantly into the air and breast them down with this huge flame, I can definitely see this working. I think it's going to be an awesome power fantasy to play.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man, it's been so long. It's been so long. We've been waiting so long, and it's only
so
like,
many leaks. So
dude,
many leaks.
So many leaks. 5 days away. It's gonna be so good. I really hope it feels good to play. Like that's one of the biggest things to me with PoE2. I love playing skills that just feel smooth and like impactful to play. That's why I love Monk a lot. That always just felt so fluid and everything. So I'm really hoping a lot of those skills feel the exact same.
Luckily, I am a bit more positive there. First of all, I think they've learned their lessons from the Huntress. at least I really hope so. And then there's just a little bit less messiness, it feels, that they can do with the forms. So there's no disengage, then you slap your twister, this you disengage, you sue your spear, you engage back again. No, you attack, then you attack with another thing, and if you're very fancy, you attack with a third thing. Yeah. And it feels like there's a lot less movement type of issues that you can get in there. So yeah. I think it will be good. I think it will actually be very good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are worried about that. And just looking at the bear with the permanent apocalypse potential, I feel like it's going to be awesome.
Most definitely. Okay, Neversink, anything else you wanted to touch on for 0.4? Any other topics that we missed?
Oh, actually, yeah, the uniques. That's definitely something I would want to touch on. I feel like there's so many awesome uniques there. Do you have a favorite buffed unique, maybe?
Oh, gosh. No, Neversink. I'm bad. I haven't looked at the unique list. Nothing that comes to mind. I looked at the patch notes and I read some of your tweets. I'm glad that I know you said earlier that Warrior Invictus and the gloves from Arbiter got buffed. I think any pinnacle loot drop uniques getting buffed is a good thing to encourage people to run those more. And I like running them too. So if I can reach them, darn Arbiter. So anything that I can, you know, sell for a little bit more money to fund my build is cool. So none that leaps out to me. What leaps out to you is your favorite?
So first of all, they've kind of made me very happy by buffing pretty much all boss uniques. Not all of them, but many, many boss uniques. For instance, there's three amulets from Xesht. All of them have been really juiced and buffed up. So, for instance, the fire amulet now rolls with up to 100 fire resistance and minus 25% fire resistance for enemies in the AoE. Feels like a perfect Bear of Kitava amulet there. And all of the other ones got buffed up as well. On top of that, many of the just slightly weaker uniques got better. Like the cloak. Was the Cloak of Defiance? No, the Mind of a Meta Cloak, the one that
Defiance of Destiny?
No.
Mind
no,
of
it was,
a Meta
no, no, it was Cloak of Defiance. It was Cloak of Defiance.
Cloak of Defiance.
So
okay.
This one now gives you 50% damage is taken from mana before life. And that means you can actually go Mind over Meta without getting the mind of a meta keystone that gives you 50% less reduced mana recovery. That means you can actually go full mana defenses again. So this is super viable, and it's going to be really big this league, I think. I think you'll see like in 0.1 builds again that only have mana for a defense pool, or mana plus CI, because then they don't need to care about chaos anymore. So that's going to be big, I think.
You know, when I asked you what they should do for 0.4, what it needs, I think you said buff boss drops, like make the uniques more valuable. So, yeah, that's cool that they actually did that. So that's pretty sweet.
Very happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And maybe Atziri has some sick items, too. Let's hope they're going hard with the queen's items, too, from her horde. So,
oh, I'm looking forward to Uber tier drops. Also going to be good.
Could you believe that, just out of wild topic to end on, could you believe the trailer, the double butts? I couldn't believe it. We go from the druid butt to the Queen Atziri butt, like back to back. It was kind of insane. I saw some people got demonetized on YouTube because of it. I didn't.
Well, I personally think it's quite good. Also, we are planning a wallpaper for Filter Blade, and I need to be careful there.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, don't go too crazy. Are you going to have a special Atziri loot filter sound pack, maybe, up on the site? I know there's the Maven
maybe.
One.
We'll see.
I've never used the Maven one. I've only heard it.
Well, I need the Atziri sounds for that, and those are not there yet.
True.
But maybe over time, that would be cool.
Yeah, I think she's going to have some good voice. I just feel it. Given what GGG has dropped in the teaser and the trailer for Atziri communing with the beast, I feel like there's going to be some spicy voice lines from the queen.
Yeah, I really like that the new leaks actually have more, you know, story and depth. So it's not just, hey, there's this blue guy, kill the blue guy who summons other blue guys, you're done, perfect. I really love that they're going for the slightly more cinematic approach.
Dude, this is a huge point that I saw a lot of people didn't really like keepers. I enjoyed it for the time I played it. I love the story. Oh, like, did you finish the entire, like, lot?
Yes.
Yeah, where you, spoilers, talk to Chayula, and then you can tell the truth
awesome.
To Aelith, and then
he
just kills her, and then her spirit is, like, throughout the monastery. Dude, excellent.
Yep. That's awesome.
Yep. So I'm in agreement. I love what they did with Abyss. They actually built out the lore there with what was he called? The nameless one, the lightless one. The guy, the crafty boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
I'm pumped. I'm pumped to see what they do with Atziri and with Doriani. All right, Neversync. I think we're going to cut it there. I'd say, like, say your socials. Literally, probably everybody here plays with loop, with Filter Blade and everything. So thank you for what you do for the community, man. It's always awesome to chat.
Sure.
One thing people might not know, it might be worth downloading Twitter just for Neversync's takes on the game, because he has the most nuanced takes of anybody on PoE1 and PoE2. And I always appreciate reading them. It levels me out when I'm feeling like, you know, giga hyped or super doom or down or not understanding something. You almost always have a tweet out that like explains like the buffs. You had a series of curios where you were like, hey, here's a whole bunch of buffs from the patch notes, dudes. There's a lot packed in there. And I read them and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I could make something around this. So appreciate you.
Thanks so much.
100%.
It's been fun being here. Thank you so much for the invite. Thanks for the chat.
100%. Right. Have a good night, man. I know it's late. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Right. Bye. That was awesome. He always just nopes out. He nopes out really fast. What did you guys think? Did you guys like the pod? Neversync is always so great, you guys. He's so good.